Boomer in the Morning is on right now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Hour two of the program is underway. Boomer in the Morning here in the iconic downtown studios, powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Get your career started in an iconic way. Apply to join the team today. Opportunities, job-related opportunities, of course. iconicec.ca/careers. If you're looking for
then you need a swing host, or
I'm not sure
an MC.
Is that what they, is that still a thing, a swing?
It used to be. I don't know. I mean,
when are they partying?
Eh? What's what?
It's a swing dance. Didn't they used
no.
to?
No, it was a radio thing. They even
do like weekends, middays. Then someone goes on vacation, you come fill that show. Just a swing guy. You'd be like going to the bullpen.
And they even had, because when I started, I was a junior swing.
What?
Yeah, that's right.
A junior swing.
Because you'd have two part-time guys.
Sounds like something you buy a Canadian Tire and put in your backyard for a five-year-old.
Yep. Yeah. So some guy would probably have the lion's share of the work.
The senior swing?
But then you'd have the, he'd be the senior swing. So he would do your weekend afternoons and some evenings, and you'd have,
I don't need to see any senior
couple, swing. Couple afternoons and a couple weekend shows. But boy, have I come a long way, guys, hey?
You ever got paid to swing?
Not enough. I did it for free.
Now, Rhett, where do you want to start? Do you want to go Flames Oilers, or are you getting thrown out of the hockey rink?
Oh,
I don't think there's anything
dear.
To talk about, really, with
I
me.
Feel like we've already scratched the surface.
No, I'm comfortable with keeping my... without allowing you to besmeech my name.
Besmirch, but
do
yes.
You wanna,
that's the word.
Want to try that one again? Hurt yourself. Yeah.
No, Ryan jumped in and helped me out,
yeah,
so
he
that
did.
Was nice.
Good team player.
Yeah, good team.
Besmeech.
Yep.
The Sneeches? Wasn't that a...
Sick of your besmeeching phrase.
Kind of look like Screech right now.
Dr. Seuss thing. So you're on the bench? You're in the stand?
So we're going to talk? I see. So whether I want to or not is irrelevant.
Well, I know you wanted to get home to watch the Bills game, and you suggested that you left the rink early, or you were given the opportunity to leave, or you were.
I don't feel like it was his choice.
Mandatory, like made to leave the rink. Yeah, you know, and then we'll move on. It's like anything else, right?
I was asked to leave for sure.
Yeah.
Or the game couldn't continue. I was, that's fine too. So I left. I got home for the football game. Just. I think I missed just the right at the opening kickoff there, but that's fine.
Dean, the cassette player, there was the play button, rewind, fast forward, and then how did you get the tape out?
I think it was eject.
Did you get ejected, Rhett? Did you get ejected?
We're in tough, you know. We started the year off good. And
how old are these kids? How old are these kids?
12 and 13.
So it's pretty serious then.
Oh yeah, I mean I hadn't shaved in 2 months. I had a big beard. Like I shaved and put on a suit and tie to go to the game.
To get ejected.
No, I
because I said to the boys, I said I'm all business today.
I've been kicked out of a few places. Never in a suit.
I'm all business.
Wedding. Huh. Now,
listen.
Now,
okay, we had to. All right. Do you want to talk?
Go, well, if you're going to explain, if not, I'm just going to kind of. Now, were you were asked to leave? You were ejected. Was this the right call to be made by the official, or was she being overzealous with their power? Are they drunk with power.
They aren't the best. You know what? They could use a course on.
Like you could do the course.
No, maybe, but I don't yell. I typically not a big yeller at the refs.
Typically, yeah.
And I didn't. We had about 12 penalties in the game, and I never said a
12,
word.
12, that's a lot, right?
I never said a word to the refs. Mm. The only time I get upset with refs is if they're not protecting the kids on the ice, because it's my belief I can't do that from the bench. Your job, protect the kids. And we had one young man get a fairly good crow's check right in the old neck head region.
Don't like to see that.
And there was only eight players because we were already down to 5-on-3. So we only had three guys on the ice. I feel like you could see that one.
That's an easy one to call, you'd think.
I've also got video of the play that corroborates my story. And at that point, I did let the ref know that his job is to protect the kids. And he told me to shut up or something of that likes. And I told him to go himself. So, and then
to what himself?
Take care of yourself. Enjoy the rest of the weekend. Watch the cheer on those Bills. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what I said, but I did let loose.
Did you black out like Ray was talking about last week, Robbie?
Almost. I was Eric Bolton for sure. Yep. Yep. For sure. And Clark Wilm thinks I'm a loser. He's texting. Thank you, Clark.
But again, 13-year-old hockey is certainly we need to take serious. Not everyone does, but luckily, Rhett, you do.
Well, I think there's a responsibility. So nothing in life should be serious?
No,
I think you are. I think you're taking a shot at me.
Not at all. I've been there. I've had kids. My kids have played at that level.
I don't think Rhett would just yell at refs willy-nilly.
Don't. I'm not. I didn't make one complaint until the kid was risking injury to the head. I don't like the cranium hits. And, yeah.
You're all about safety.
Safety.
That's one thing I like about you, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, take care of the kids.
Absolutely.
I'm so stupid.
Anyway, we'll move on.
We came back from a 9-5 deficit. 9-5. No, we got a tie, which felt like a win. Oh, we had overcome a lot.
Look at you. Do anything to motivate the boys.
That's right. Fellas rally.
I drink heavily.
Okay. So the going into Saturday, now I'm going to take you back. What was going through your head, or what was your confidence level, I guess, but what was your feel about the Calgary Flames? Got a big win against Florida. Now the Panthers did not seem themselves, but the Calgary Flames, look, all you can do is play the team that's on the ice against you.
Boys, it was the Panthers on the road. That's what they do.
So you went out and you beat one of the top teams in the league. You snapped the losing streak, you got home, you got it done. You go up to Edmonton, you're playing a team that's reeling. What was your gut? Did you have a feel going into tonight's game? This Koskinen's playing because he's got to because of injuries and all of this sort of thing. What was your feel for as far as the Flames' chances at winning? Asking you, Rhett.
My confidence was low.
And is that just
mostly based on? Sometimes you just feel like the other team when they're on those skids, you don't. They have to break out of it eventually. I mean, how many times did Ryan say last week they're not that bad? Maybe not as good as they were, but they certainly aren't lose 7 in a row. Bad.
They were due to find the back of the net and get some more saves. Both of those things were unsustainable in terms of how they'd been going.
When it was 2-0, I was like, "Oh, this is pretty good." My confidence was up.
2-0 after one, Flames outshoot them 19-13, and here's the problem. I know for me, I watched it after the fact and knew how things were going to go. So as you watch it in real time, I'm guessing you feel like at 2-0, this is going to go a certain way.
Against that team with those two guys in this Battle of Alberta, no. Okay, against other teams, yeah.
Because the only reason I say that is because I didn't, knowing that it was eventually, we're going to be talking about a tie game going into the third period.
Something about that team and in this rivalry, it's just not safe and the points aren't tucked away until they're tucked away. And they certainly weren't after 20. You got to love that period. But, I mean, how many times have we seen defensemen turnstiled by 97 and that power play embarrass Flames goalies? Like, maybe I'm speaking personally, but that did not feel over after the first so much as a good start and that something that needed to continue. It still felt like the next goal was the biggest goal of the game.
which went to the Oilers on the power play, and then another power play, Lindholm gets a holding call, and it's both times Bouchard with shots from well out that that find their way in. Then Perlini's goal, bad goal? I mean, the screen, what's our read on that? I'm not to nitpick, we're talking about a game that's 2 days ago. I just was surprised to see Perlini score from that area. Either way, they tie it before the end of the third, and then they get to the third. And shots are 17-6 in that final frame. But go figure that Mikko Koskinen chose this night and had this evening to have his best game, I would suggest,
of the year. Yeah.
Koskinen said it was probably the biggest win of his career, based on what was happening with the team, the attention, the negativity, and was so much on the line.
And the fact that he might not have an NHL career after this year if he doesn't find a way to turn it around here.
Yeah.
Like, the status quo ain't good enough to get another job in this league. It just isn't.
44 saves. And for Darryl afterwards, and I can play the stuff, but it's all you need to know is that he was not unhappy with how they played.
No.
They just need to find a way to finish. And that's the other thing about that Oilers team. They're very fragile. I know they were talking after the first period, Elliot and those, this is a fragile team. They were down 2-0. If you go 3-0, 4-0, then that fragility probably comes in, right?
It felt like the third goal was the game.
To your point, they get into the second period. They get an early power play and a goal. It's 2-1, and then it feels
different. And 3-3 heading to the third, the big guys still haven't got one on you yet. And it just feels like you're not going to have many nights where either 97 or 29 don't score at least one against you. Sure enough, there it is. Game over.
Lots of chances for the Flames.
A ton. Enough to win. If you're a process person, you can't be upset with that. Like, did you get 2 points? No. If you play that type of contest 82 games a year, you're probably winning your division. You certainly have home ice. It's that kind of a performance that you would win 70 to 80% of the time, I'd suggest.
It's a Calgary take for sure, and I do agree with you. Because on the other side, I also think if you're the Oilers, you got the win, it feels great. Mm-hmm. But if you want to give up that many slot chances and high danger chances,
the Blues are going to bury more than that.
You're still in trouble.
Yeah.
Make no mistake about it.
No,
your goalie
and
had
they're
to be,
still not defensively good.
Yeah, your goalie had to be fantastic. And it's a 5-3, but it's essentially 5-3 empty net. It's a one-goal win.
The Tyson Berry injury might be a good thing because Bouchard's better.
Yeah, he was fine.
He's been really good all year.
Yeah, he was fine.
Like, one of the complaints I have with that team is they actually have some good young prospects, but they're playing these fossils or, you know, flawed defenders ahead of them. Like, why aren't you playing Bouchard a ton? You are now because of injury.
Rhett, the game-winning goal, and it's one of those things you probably want, you go back and look at it, but the Flames had sustained pressure. They were in a very good shape, and then Draisaitl manages to get around Tanev, cuts to the net. You are talking about one of the top five, top three players in the world. He is going to be able to make plays. Was there anything specifically about the way he cuts in? Does Tanev, do you haul him down? Does the goalie need to get a stick on that? There was also what looked to be some interference in the slot where Puljujarvi takes out Shillington. Excuse me. Now, does Shillington engage with him trying to draw one? I don't know, but just, I guess, your take on that game-winning goal.
Well, two things. Great play by Draisaitl, and not so great by Tanev. I mean, you break it down into the, oh, could have done this, could have. Well, he made a great play. Goalie maybe could have stopped him from going across. There's all kinds of things you wish you'd have done, but he just made a great play. And if you're Tanev, you can't get beat like that. Shillington's relying on Tanev to play that guy, right?
Not often you see, and he's one of the few guys that can do it, but not often you see Tanev get beaten wide in that fashion. Either way, you come back to the Calgary Flames. They've got the Blues tonight, and it's the same story if you go back to that road trip. Is it secondary scoring, or is it finishing on your chances? And there are fans who will say, regardless of what you want to call it, either you're not finishing or you need depth. Where are you if you're Brad Treliving with this team, Red? Are you looking, because right now it's, I think it's safe to say that because Ryan and I were talking to the break, you know, Magic Patty's not going to score 40 goals, it doesn't look like. And you're not getting much offense at all out of
Well, again, I was disappointed in, I mean, I know he's playing in a defensive role, but Backlund doesn't look like he's...
It's a little off.
We mentioned him in the break as well. It's at his age, it feels like he is slowing down a little bit. He's got 4 goals in 36 games, but it does seem like, for whatever the reason, COVID, age, season, struggles, but he's looked off for sure. And I thought that was another one of those games where he just didn't bring a lot. So now you're talking about your second line center. You know what the Monahan situation is. Dylan Dubé's trying to find his way as well. Center, wing. He had a great opportunity off that feed by Monahan. There again, does that put the Oilers in a tough spot in the third period there? But do you sit and wait for more offense with this team? Do you feel like it's there? Or is it something that Treliving is like, if we're going to get somewhere, we need to address it here?
I think he would like to address it, but there's lots of things you'd like to have. And I'm still stuck with, well, what's available? How much is the cost? Is it actually, or is your team a goal away from being elite? You know what I mean? If you bring a guy in and he's going to score that goal, is that taking you to the next level? And at what cost? Or is this a team that just has to grind out victories?
They'll add. They always add. It's just not going to be a huge piece in a first rounder for a rental. I don't think.
Well, and I don't think it's. You certainly don't need to do it as a desperation thing. If it makes sense, go ahead.
And I don't think it has to be expensive either. I don't think it has to be a huge, sexy name. It just needs to be somebody that can play in your top nine that can finish some chances a little better. Like, you don't need Pitlick and Richie in your top nine on the right side. It's absolutely crushing you offensively. They don't give up much defensively. We get it. But the number of offensive chances that have died on Brett Ritchie's stick in the last, 2 weeks, it's mind-numbing. Like, didn't he put one from, 2 feet in front of the net over the bar and out of play this week?
Yeah, certainly over the net. He had the one play, that one-time chance in tight.
You need someone to finish some of these. And I just see a lot of fourth-liners on the roster. But, structurally, they're not easy to play against. They typically get very good goaltending. Good special teams, top line's been great, but yeah, you need another top nine forward, at least, maybe two.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody's suggesting you go out, get one player, and you become elite.
But you try to improve the team because you're a GM and that's your job,
right? The goal is to make the playoffs.
Yeah, and then if you get in there, be a tough out. Get to the second round. Like, this isn't the type of team that you look at and says there's no way they can win in the playoffs. They have structure, goaltending, and they're bigger and nastier than recent additions of this group.
You could also just... And if you don't do it, you can also go down to the room and say, hey, guys that are here, feel free. Vax, feel free to play.
Yeah, it's just they always do, even if it's a third or fourth round.
I'm not saying they won't. I know, yeah, absolutely. But it isn't. If Backlund has 4 or 5 more goals, and if Dubé probably expect a few more, you know what I mean? It's singling out Richie. I still don't think they were – he's playing maybe out of position as far as depth in the lineup.
Yeah,
but I don't think they were going into the year thinking Richie was going to put up 20, 25.
It's a comment on their depth, not a comment on who Richie is. Richie's being Brett Richie. He's absolutely Brett Richie. It's just that guy shouldn't be in your top nine ever, and he spent a lot of the year there. Ditto Pitlick.
I'm kind of with Red on this, though. You can hammer on Richie for... He's not the one barging into Sutter's office saying, hey, I'm playing third line or nothing tonight.
Like I just said, it's a statement on depth. It's not a statement about Brett Ritchie.
But it's not
just tough to see all the ice he's getting.
Listen, just hang on. It's not just depth, though. It's the guys who are in the second line role that aren't performing. Do you want more out of Coleman offensively? He's been better as of late, but you probably want a little more there. You need more out of Backlund. Mangiapane has cooled off. Dubé, right? So, yeah, you've got depth, but it's also about the quality there.
Yeah, no, and my point is that there isn't 9 top 9 forwards here. And if Brett Ritchie's your fourth line right winger, you deal with it. Ditto Pitlick. Ditto Lewis. But you can't have 3 of those guys playing on the right side, which is what they've done a lot of the year. And I don't think it's like, you're like, well, geez, do you add to this group? Of course you do. They always add. What can you get for depth? Who can you add for a third or fourth rounder that isn't in the bottom third of the league and finishing his chances? Somebody that can come in and not miss the, backdoor tap in somehow.
Me?
I am.
Mm-hmm. No.
No? What did you get there?
Like, what would Callie Yarncroft cost you? Not a star, yeah, just
to say,
a,
right?
but better than the three guys they've played down the right. Like, just improve the roster. Find someone better. Push someone into the rafters.
And everyone else still score.
Yeah, well, you got to keep the top line going, yeah.
And it's tricky because when's the trade deadline? 2 months away?
It's March.
It's March. So any of these teams we talk about in the East where it looks like it's pretty much nailed down as to what teams are getting in. So if you're a non-playoff team, why are you making a trade on the 24th of Jan?
If you think it helps you secure home ice, but I think to your point...
No, if you're a non-playoff team.
To your point, it's like teams might offer you a touch more to get something done now, but you want the auction. You want GMs bidding against each other in March.
So if you're Ron Francis with Callie Yarncroft, or you're one of...
Or Johansson, or any of those other guys that are there.
Like, I appreciate the offer. We're just going to hang tight.
We'll wait and see in a couple months.
We'll wait and see, which doesn't do...
Blackwell plays in there. He's a good finisher.
I mean...
Lots of names out there. Phil! What would happen if you brought Phil into the top nine here? How are you not better? I know it's not sexy and all that, but goodness.
What do you mean it's not sexy? It's Phil.
It's incredibly sexy
Phil's
off the
incredibly
ice. On the ice,
sexy.
It's not that sexy.
Good pickup,
but
Brett.
Like offensively, you're upgrading massively on the guy that goes into the rafters from bringing him in, right? And what's he getting? Like, that's a second rounder at best, maybe a third? Who cares?
It's probably a couple. It's probably a couple picks by
later
the time
picks,
it's done.
Like it's,
and he's got to want to go there, right? Doesn't he have some no-trade protection?
Well, I think,
there?
You know, it depends who's interested. He'll probably have some say, but, like, do you not want to get out of Phoenix and play in the playoffs? That's been a nightmare there.
Who knows with Phil, right? If there's one guy that kind of does his own thing, that's him.
Yeah, but like, he's also been called a guy that didn't. You never win with him, and he got two cups.
I know.
Like, I think he's competitive and wants to win.
What I'm saying is, this is a guy who knows what it's like to be uncomfortable, living in a pressure cooker. He's got some jewelry. He's making money. He's living in the desert. He's a free agent at the season's end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to go anywhere. It wouldn't be the craziest thing, but yeah, I'm fascinated. So all these years, I've been working with you guys for years. I keep saying there's. How is this guy an Iron Man? You said it earlier. This guy's played 900 straight games.
He's 23 back of Yandle.
How is that
like
guy?
He will set the Iron Man record for the NHL. It's more probable than he won't next year, if not this year. Once if they sit down Yandle after he gets the record.
Now, granted, this year he's got 5 goals in 40 games.
Tell me about
so
the assists.
We're crushing Backlund for not scoring.
No, but I mean, great offense, right? Like, the assist totals are pretty nice. Was he a half assist
22.
A game? Yeah.
22.
Like, where does that put him in flame scoring? Pretty decently. Right? Points? Yeah. And it's not like he's surrounded.
Is that why you're bringing in Phil Kessels for him to make plays or to score
I'm
goals?
Telling you, you need people to create offense here. I don't think we can't build consensus there. Come on.
Did anybody throw drinks and stuff at you when you left the rink, Rhett? Because I know you were wearing a suit. Do you need any dry cleaning done? Or?
No. Well, the suit could probably be tossed.
Really? Any tight or?
It's tight. And old. Like I had, that's 20 years ago. I probably wore that to Tampa Bay for Game 7. Bad luck.
Oh, you
bad
did?
Bad luck suit.
Right, you guys didn't win that one, did you?
No, we lost that too.
We'll break and come back. What happened with the one seeds? It's got to go through Lambeau, the Titans. Another week for Derrick Henry
home
to
team.
Come back and
home
get it
team.
Done. These home teams. Oof. JLC, Jason Lacanfora, our NFL insider, is next. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
You're listening to Boomer in the Morning with Ryan Pinder and Rhett Warner on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Calgary Flame game day here on Sportsnet. 7 o'clock St. Louis here. Blues were in Vancouver last night. Picked up a 3-1 win over the Canucks. Ville Husso, 38 saves. So back-to-back games for the Blues. You wonder if it will be Jordan Binnington going tonight. And as far as the Flames, tonight home to St. Louis, they'll travel tomorrow into Columbus and then St. Louis, back-to-back Wednesday, Thursday, then back home to take on the Canucks on Saturday. It's You're not going to hear a whole
Canucks
lot of...
First game of the year.
I know.
It's been forever.
You're not going to hear a whole lot of harping out of the peanut gallery here about, well, we need more games.
There'll be lots.
Now, they play Saturday, and then they're off until Tuesday, Wednesday, and there's a bit of a break. But with all these games being rescheduled starting in February, it is going to be wild here for the next little bit. Let's get to it. It's time for our NFL Insider. It's brought to you by McLeod Trail Midas. Skip the dealer with complimentary brake inspections and brakes starting at $159 only at McLeod Trail Midas. Book today at McLeodTrailMidas.com. Jay, thanks for coming on, man. I know it's always busy the day after. We've only got three games left. It's starting to hit me, but The game last night, you know the world we live in where it's the recency bias or what has just happened is sure. Always, it's the greatest, it's the worst, we'll talk about it forever, but I have a feeling we're going to remember what Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes and these two teams did last night. It was an unbelievable finish. Just your thoughts on your thoughts on someone having to lose that thing, and in this case it was the Bills.
Epic football game, lived up and surpassed any of the hype or expectations. And I do think it'll stand out because I don't think it happened in a vacuum. I don't think it's an anomaly by any stretch. In fact, it's a continuum game, right? I mean, this is a developing rivalry between these teams and between these quarterbacks, a friendly one for the most part. And they, you know, they pick up where they almost right where they left off last year. I mean, last year was a championship game, and obviously it's probably worthy of a Super Bowl. And here they are again on the big stage, only game being played, entire world watching, and they take it to another level, and they keep bringing out the best in each other as opponents and as opposing quarterbacks. I mean, this was as compelling and wild of a weekend as football that I can recall, and I've been watching playoff football since the late 70s. This, maybe it is recency bias, I don't know.
Yeah,
but it felt pretty special. I mean, look, the Chargers Dolphins divisional playoff in 81, the Kellen Winslow, you know, being carried off after Rolf Benerska finally wins it in overtime and the hook and lateral and all that, like, that's way up there for me. And there's obviously been, I mean, you've got, you know, the catch. We got a lot of different ways we could go. There's been some epic Super Bowls. But, man, for for the what happened in the final 2 minutes through overtime and the way these two were able to keep sort of playing this bizarre game of anything, you know, I can do, you can do, I can do better. It's pretty special.
So knowing what we know now for the Bills, do you do anything different? Do you squib kick? How do you defend better in that last 13 seconds in overtime? They marched it on you. What could more have been, obviously stop them, but you know, Monday morning quarterback, what do you do differently?
Well, I the squib kick did surprise me, you know, to bleed that clock a little bit more, to make them fight a little bit more, just, you know, maybe they fumble the ball. I think if you're looking for real-time mistakes, you know, we can start there. 13 seconds, it shouldn't be enough time to do what they did. I don't know that you can look at a particular play call or a particular individual and try to say that they were the reason that it failed. In that short window of time, this is Patrick Mahomes. You know, it's not like, you know, whoever, Jared Goff did that against them. This guy has and will continue to do things that have been unprecedented, at least for someone at this stage of his career. I mean, what else can you do better? I mean, you honestly, like, get home field advantage.
Yeah, I know. It's...
I mean, that's probably what it's going to take. Like, this is becoming like Tom Brady. You know what I mean? And that thing, that Patriots thing for the better part of two decades, if you really want to have a fighting chance, get them in your place. Because it's going to be exceedingly difficult in there. So every little game, every little slip up, anything that happens in the regular season where you could have done better, that, you know, especially when we saw how much the Chiefs were treading water, if not sinking a little bit at times in the first 2 months of the season, you got to find a way to get them to your place.
The Rams are going to have people at their place. They will not travel again. They've won 7 of 8. They had a very comfortable 27-3 lead. It went away. Mm-hmm. What do you make of that? Is it, you know, they had, what, 5 fumbles all season, 4 of them yesterday? Is it just one of those things?
Yeah.
Or do the Rams have some concerns here that they need to clean up? Because really, over the last 2 weeks, they've looked pretty strong.
They have. It's just when you're doing this stuff against Brady in his place, when you only take 12 seconds off the clock here, right? When you only take 19 seconds off the clock there, and you've got that assassin sitting on the other side and his heart and mind knowing, if I lose this game, I might never do this again. You knew there was going to be a rally. Now, I didn't know that they'd be able to rally like that. I think there's things when they look at how they manage that clock, some of the things they did, calling plays, obviously, you know, the Akers, the fumbles. I mean, that weird stuff tends to happen when you're facing Tom Brady in the playoffs. You know, I think defensively, some you know, how they approach certain situations, if faced, they might try to do it a little differently. But, I mean, Matt Stafford looked the goat in the eye, never blinked, and found, you know what I mean? And found a way to maybe send him home for good. Like, it's pretty impressive.
It is. I wanted to ask you about Stafford, his 43rd game-winning drive. And prior to last week, because this is now back-to-back weeks where he's not turned the ball over, he was a turnover machine,
yes.
Pick sixes. These are two of his finest games that we've seen. And it's, you watch the Lions stink off of a guy, and it's amazing. But what he did, the coverage on Cup in that the last couple of plays there, whatever it was, 20 seconds left. I mean, you need to cover him better than that, but it's a hell of a throw. I don't know that Stafford's getting enough credit for putting the ball in the perfect spot for that play to take place.
No, I think Matt Stafford deserves all the credit in the world. He's always been a super tough individual, but not someone who sort of wore his machismo on his sleeve. Or not one who, like, reveled in, you know, the mythology of his injuries. He just, because, look, there wasn't a whole lot of attention on a lot of those Lions games. You know, the Detroit Lions, by late November, most years, weren't playing for much. But he was oftentimes dealing with quite a bit. I've always been a Stafford guy. I've always thought in the right hands that he could, he was an elite quarterback and that he could help a team produce elite results overall. If people knew what they were doing around him, and they certainly do now. And you cannot tell the story of this Rams season without really focusing on the three big moves that they made. Stafford in the offseason, and then, you know, working the thing out with Odell Beckham, and then trading for Von Miller at a time when people said, oh, they've got no cap space, there's nothing they can do, they're stuck. Those moves were huge. Playing that game without their left tackle, and now Tampa's without its left tackle, it was going to kind of come down to who exploited that the most. And I know Von Miller was dealing with an ankle thing when they got him, but they dominated more at the line of scrimmage than the Bucs did. And we can talk quarterbacks and we can talk Cooper Kupp. You know, we can talk Mike Evans and his ridiculous catch. And there was a lot of amazing stuff that happened in that game. But ultimately, I kind of feel like in some ways it came down to the absence of Whitworth was, the absence of Wirfs was exploited more than the absence of Whitworth.
Jason Lackenfor, our NFL insider here on Sportsnet 960. Ryan?
Give us something on the Bengals here. They're going to be huge underdogs. Looks like around a touchdown the early line against the Chiefs at Arrowhead, yeah. Probably rightfully so. But they're here, and that's well beyond what many people had for this group at the start of the year.
I mean, again, they're just making plays at the most important times, whether it's their safeties, whether it's Joe Burrow or Ja'Marr Chase. They have adopted Joe Burrow's aura. You know, Joe Burrow's mentality, where whatever we do is not good enough, because our manifest destiny is to win championships and to be that kind of an organization that's competing for championships. So they don't get caught up too much in the moment or in what they just accomplished. They certainly have exuded a killer instinct. You know, you look at the first drive interception, you look at, you know, what they did to put themselves in position to win that game when it looked like Tennessee, you know, might be marching down the field and finding a way to do what they have to do. Just a really gutsy football team. Now, they've got their flaws, though, undoubtedly. And the reason I picked against them was because I thought Joe Burrow was going to get absolutely destroyed. And he did. I mean, 9 sacks in a playoff game is ridiculous. And a lot of them were just, I mean, is it going to be Simmons? Is it going to be Autry? Is it going to be Landry? Like, anybody could have got there. They were really just running over that offensive line, and the right side of Cincinnati's offensive line in particular is a big, big problem. And I'll say the same thing I said last week. When they won that game against the Raiders, I was like, they're going to need a lot more out of a lot more people to beat the Titans. And they're going to need a whole lot more out of Joe Mixon, out of some of their pass rushers to get it done. But, you know, Logan Wilson stepped up. Again, you know, obviously Von Dahl stepped up. They've got a lot of good football players. I don't know that they can go on the road again as young as they are, as beat up as they are, as vulnerable as they are on the offensive line and slay that dragon, you know, that Mahomes and Andy Reid thing. But I certainly don't think they'll back down from the fight. They did beat this team a few weeks ago, although, again, that's a very different stage. And I'm sure Joe Burrow will do everything in his power to try to match Patrick Mahomes.
Well, and you can assume that if the Bengals give up 9 sacks again, they aren't going to win on that side. Yeah. How equipped is Kansas City to get that kind of pressure on that offensive line?
Well, I mean, it's looking pretty good these days. You know, Chris, look, we've seen them start the season with Chris Jones lined up at end instead of tackle because they didn't have, you know, the bodies that they wanted up front. It didn't go that great, but he picked up a lot of experience doing it. You can start moving him around the way we've seen, like, the Rams move Aaron Donald around to just keep messing with different guys and getting in their heads. Melvin Ingram has been an absolute force for them. There's no two ways about that. You know, they have some linebackers they can activate a little bit as well. So I think Steve Spagnuolo will, their defensive coordinator, will be willing to sell out here or there to really make that presence felt on Joe Burrow and to try to make the Bengals pay, especially if they're not going to max protect. I just think the Bengals are going to have to run their offense for me a little bit more through Joe Mixon in this one.
Not many would have expected that the Packers special teams would have gotten worse after last year, but boy, it's front and center.
Hey.
It's front and center today, isn't it? The blocked punt, obviously, for a touchdown, blocked field goal, gave up great. Debo ran for 45 yards off that return that set up a field goal. They didn't have enough players on for the Robbie Gould game winning. It was an awful day for these special teams. That won't sit well with Aaron Rodgers or anybody, but and with how that game started, with the way the Packers ran, they walked the field for that first score.
Yeah.
I thought this is going to be a snot bubbling here. I can't believe the Niners came back and won this football game.
Well, I mean, you're watching into that game into the halftime, and you know the Niners have minus 14 net passing yards. I mean, and then you know they finally I mean, it took forever for them to get a first down, for them to cross midfield. But on the other side, Green Bay stopped scoring points also. And Aaron Rodgers didn't have another drive the rest of the day that he finished like that first one. And it just kind of felt like one of these where the longer that this team hangs around, the more you feel like momentum and just sort of confidence was swaying to San Francisco. Like they thought they're leaving us an opportunity to tie this thing up or ultimately win it. And we're going to get it some way, somehow, even when guys were dropping balls, even when Garoppolo's accuracy was off at times. And Green Bay special teams has been horrendous for years. It's almost as if they pretend it doesn't matter or it's insignificant. And it obviously cost them big time. And special teams was huge in a lot of these games. I mean, we just talked about the squib kick. How about, you know, Tyreek Hill's big return when they put him back there to start fielding punts because it's go time and everybody's got to do, you know, whatever we can. And, yeah, obviously Green Bay special teams were a complete failure. Now, credit San Francisco. They also, you know, they know what they're doing in that aspect of play over there. But that stuff is just it's always important, and it's massive this time of year when if you can't execute simple things. I mean, that punter took three steps instead of two. I mean, there's just so – like you said, 10 men on the field. It's you know, a little bit shameful. But look, Aaron Rodgers is also 2-4 in his last six playoff games. And they've been scoring in the low 20s in a lot of those games. And, you know, he did not take that game over. He did not put his team in a position where there's no way they're going to blow this or no way they're going to lose that. He had his struggles, and they had their struggles as an offense. I know they lost Dylan in the game, this or that. That stuff's going to happen. But let's not pretend this was some epic performance by Aaron Rodgers.
And he'll be one of the central figures in what's sure to be a busy quarterbacking carousel. Add in Garoppolo and with Trey Lance waiting in the wings, Deshaun Watson's drama's yet to unfold. Russell Wilson, there's other spots around the league where teams will look to upgrade. No vote of confidence in Indy. Like, give us the few weeks out conversation. Once the Super Bowl's done, that the offseason will be all about these quarterbacks.
Well, yeah. I mean, look, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, first and foremost. I mean, I don't think Brady's going to drag this out through February, and Aaron Rodgers has said he's going to have a resolution to his situation, whether he's in Green Bay or somewhere else. That's coming next month. That's going to come before the combine starts in March. Yes, Russell Wilson is potentially to be traded, depending on what the Raiders do here, what direction they go in with coach and GM. Are they young guys? Are they old guys? Derek Carr is someone who, if you feel like you need a bunch of pieces there to get better, trading Derek Carr is probably your only path to replenishing things. It's not like they've got a lot of other options. The Deshaun Watson situation, obviously there's legal aspects there that there's no set time frame on, but the Texans organization, I mean, Nick Caserio said it's more likely than not he's elsewhere. Where that is remains to be seen. You know, Kirk Cousins has an untenable, I mean, he's got like a $40 million cap figure. Are they willing to eat money to try to trade him somewhere? Is anybody looking at him? Yeah, the Garoppolo thing for sure. I mean, it's not super pretty, but for $25 million bucks next year with a team that's pretty ready to win right now, I don't care what you gave up for Trey Lance. He's played almost no football for the better part of two and a half years. Are you really willing? You're not going to get a ton back for Garoppolo. Do you really feel like you have to make that trade right now? And even the Eagles, I do believe them when they say Jalen Hurts, we expect to be our starter week one, but they got three of the first 19 picks. If they end up with a quarterback who they like, who starts progressing more quickly than maybe they thought, you know, we've seen them trade Sam Bradford when they were paying him a ton of money because they didn't think Wentz was ready yet, and then somebody gets hurt and they get a one for Bradford, and next thing you know, Wentz is ready. And, yeah, the Colts have to find a quarterback somewhere, speaking of Wentz. He's I don't know how they do it because they're kind of stuck in purgatory and no man's land, but – they want to upgrade. I just don't know who they recruit to go there. Most of these quarterbacks will have other options. And I'm not sure Indianapolis is going to be able to do the kind of thing they'd like to do, although Derek Carr, again, would be another name I'd keep an eye on regarding them.
Jay, appreciate it. Three more games. Let's enjoy them.
Yes, sir. Look forward to chatting with you guys next week.
Thanks,
Thank you.
You bet. There's our NFL insider, Jason Lackenfor, brought to you by McLeod Trail Midas. Skip the dealer. Complimentary brake inspections and brakes starting at $159. Only at McLeod Trail Midas. Book today, McLeodTrailMidas.com. Right up in front of 8, hour number 2 comes to a close. In hour 3, we'll do what you want to talk about. The show picks, eek, and some hockey talk. Flames game day. We'll talk about the Blues and the Flames at the Dome tonight. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.